In American society, money is a taboo topic. We're taught at a young age it's improper to talk about it, but we're also bombarded with messages about the power and importance of money in our everyday lives. And by not talking about it, we miss out on the skills and lessons we need to effectively understand and financially plan. That changes today. Welcome to Money Tales. Hosted by Sandy Brager and Cami Doder, Money Tales brings more than 35 years of combined professional experience in personal finance to demystify money and demonstrate what it's like to speak openly about personal financial matters. Join us each episode as they interview modern-day movers and shakers about how money decisions intertwine with their daily lives in order to give you better insight into productive financial conversations. Subscribe today and register for our blog Fathom at esperient.com/podcasts to increase your money mojo. And now, here's Cami and Sandy.
Jennifer Gwynn joins us this week on Money Tales. After years of career success as a real estate developer, Jen decided to step away to raise her three children. She describes this as a scary jump for her and her husband because she was making good money and it'd be an adjustment to live on one income. Fast forward to when their youngest child went off to kindergarten. Jen was ready to head back to work. But she knew that whatever she decided to do next, it had to be worth it to take her away from the kids. She landed on taking a leap of faith by creating a nonprofit with a friend called Pebble Tossers. They were passionate about their mission to equip and empower youth to lead through service. So much so that they decided not to take salaries for a while. And even when they eventually did, Jen's priority was to put the money back into building her team and the business. Together, they have evolved Pebble Tossers into a successful and award-winning organization. Let me tell you more about Jen. She's a trusted expert in the field of youth development who forges strong relationships with companies, schools, industry leaders, and other nonprofit organizations to bring partnership to fruition and develop active and diverse board members. Jen provides expert guidance on all aspects of community service, fundraising, grant writing, corporate and community giving.
Here are three key money topics Jen hits on in this conversation. First, how her dad used the back of a paper napkin to teach her and her sisters about investing. Second, how and why Jen came up with a self-sustaining revenue-generating business model for Pebble Tossers. And third, how despite the fulfillment she's achieved by helping her community through Pebble Tossers, Jen sometimes struggles with having intentionally set her current salary as more of a stipend. We hope you share this episode with a friend, and please subscribe to Money Tales on your favorite podcast platform. Now on to our conversation with Jennifer Gwynn.
Welcome to the Money Tales podcast. I'm Cami Doder.
And I'm Sandy Brager. Cami, have you had a chance to see the documentary film Still? I think it's playing on Apple Plus. It's been there for a bit.
I have not yet, but I'm very interested.
It's a great film about Michael J. Fox and his life. My husband and I had the opportunity recently to watch the film in a movie theater, and Michael J. Fox and the director Davis Guggenheim were there afterwards in conversation, which was incredible.
Wow.
Not only because I was a huge Family Ties and Back to the Future franchise fan as a kid, so it felt like meeting, you know, someone I grew up with in a sense, but really to understand Michael J. Fox's experience and what it was like for him to come out in really part of the height of his career as having Parkinson's disease. There's so much vulnerability in this film that translates to money conversations and just any hard conversation in life. It really is amazing what happens when people are willing to get vulnerable and share their truth and open up. It helps create connection, certainly as an audience member. Another aspect of the post-film conversation that I thought was really interesting was the comments that Michael J. Fox made about his foundation that he set up with his family to raise funds to support Parkinson's disease research. He said they have materially contributed as a family to that foundation, but overall, the total funding to date has been close to $2 billion with a B. dollars, which I thought was incredible. It was really wonderful to hear him modeling that in this movie theater. And there was another patron there who has Parkinson's disease, and he was sharing firsthand how he's benefited from some of the research that the foundation has supported.
Sandy, wow.
It was really cool.
He's really an inspiration in so many ways. And this is another one for anybody who's watched Parkinson's impact people. It's just awful. And just to think that what he's been able to do with his fame, his money, and raising money and having those money conversations to help not just him, it helps so many people.
So many people. So I do encourage you to see the film. And
I will.
Any listeners who haven't seen it yet, it's amazing. And it was so cool how they took real life clips of the work he's done to support some of the conversation along the way.
Sandy, I can't wait to watch it. Thanks for the recommendation. Well, I'd like to welcome our guest today, Jennifer Gwynn. Welcome to the Money Tales podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Would you introduce yourself and share a couple pivotal moments that really influenced who you are today?
Yes, I am Jennifer Gwynn. I'm an Atlanta native, and I am the founder and executive director for a youth development and youth service organization called Pebble Tossers. And our tagline is Start a Ripple of Giving. So it's trying to instill in kids from a young age about service, about giving back, about philanthropy, and giving them the resources and the opportunities to do that also. And we just had our 15th anniversary a couple months ago, so it's very exciting. I am a mother of three, and they're all out of the house now. So that has been a very interesting experience navigating that and then transitioning over their bank accounts. My oldest daughter the other day said, I'm going to close out my operating account. Is that okay? And I was like, that's your account. Now you're 26. So yes, you can do that and take my name off. That's just a little bit about me, married and just navigating all of that.
Jen, it's a lot.
I know, you make it sound so easy and casual.
I know that they talk about operating accounts. I mean, we're going to get there because I want to know how that becomes part of the family lexicon. Before we do, we always like to understand people's backstory. It really influences so much of our relationship with money. So tell us, Jen, as you were growing up, when did money start having meaning?
From probably the day I was born. I grew up in the 70s, and my dad is a serial entrepreneur, just always looking for the next deal. He's one of those people that never meets a stranger, and he can very quickly get to a connection point with somebody, whether it's through, where'd you go to school? Anything. And it's just always been amazing for my sisters and I. I've got two younger sisters, and we're all pretty close in age. His office was in our den, and so he would snap at us if the three of us were being too loud. He's like, girls! And he's been trying to be on a work call or something. He started off in Dow Chemicals and then went to several other things, got into the coal business. He would travel to Kentucky to work with people in the coal mines. And so he was gone most of my early childhood and would come home on the weekends. Then he got into real estate, and he's just has kind of done so many different things. And I can remember always, whenever we would do anything, he would whip out a napkin and a silver cross pen and would like, okay, girls, let's talk about our finances. We'd be like 10 years old and be like, okay, we're going to listen.
What were those conversations about, Jen? I'm so curious. We got the napkin, we got the pen.
Well, he would have different deals, and I use air quotes, deals that he's working on, whether it was a piece of property he was looking at or some sort of this investment. He'd be talking with all kinds of people and would pick up on a brake company, Breakfast. He would invest in that, or he'd invest in a kid's clothing company, all these different random things. And now I look back and think, did he have criteria that he was using to go on these things? Or did he just like have a gut feeling? And he just has a gut feeling. I have since learned that I don't have that gut feeling. So I do a little bit more research when I'm looking on things. But my sisters and I were always involved with the paper napkin. And he would write out calculations, and you're looking at compounding interest. He's like, okay, girls, now listen, if you invest this now, in 15 years, you'll have this. And so we always had that growing up.
Oh, Jen, how valuable.
So valuable.
He gave each of us stock in a company, and he taught us how to get the Wall Street Journal out and sit at the table and go through and find, this is like when you could find the stock in the newspaper and track it. And we'd circle it and then write it down and track it. And the stock ended up being worthless.
But priceless in the education.
Important lessons in that too.
Yes. It's now a family joke. But yeah, we always just kind of grew up with knowing how important money was. And in our dad's eyes, money equaled success, which has been an interesting life journey. As a nonprofit founder, I look at it differently now.
I like the napkin learning because it's not too much. It's bite-sized pieces of information, digestible pieces of information your folks were imparting on you. Do you remember one of them that you still use today?
We still have these conversations, and my sisters live in North Carolina and I'm in Atlanta, and we'll have family Zooms to have these conversations. And it's a little bit more advanced, and we're trying to get everybody moved to a Google spreadsheet so we can all update it in real time. But it was mostly just about him wanting us to know where things stood with the family. I think he always wanted us to know that we were going to be taken care of. It was being in the early 70s, you know, it was just a rough time in the country. My mom was working, he was working. We were just doing what we could too. Obviously, we're babysitting or whatever we could, to dog watching. My sisters and I, we always cut our own grass. And my dad bought the lawnmower, but we had to pay him back for the lawnmower by him not paying us to mow the grass. We were earning the lawnmower.
Wow.
Other family members still give my dad grief about
it. That's pretty masterful on his part.
I know. Like, really, Dad? Come on.
As an adolescent, you're growing up, you're making money, you're spending money, you're learning all those habits. What happens when you go to college? You kind of move into more of a financially independent adult. What's going on with your money relationship at that point?
I was still very frugal. The frugality that was imparted upon my parents really kept me through college. I never spent more than I had. I still worked in college. I didn't have to pay for college. That was a huge gift from my parents, that I didn't have to get a student loan. And that was very important for them. The jobs that I had was for the fun stuff, going to movies or going out to wherever, bars and things like that, being a college student.
So then what'd you do after you graduated? What was your career at that time?
I graduated college in 91, kind of a rough time in the country. And I was a political science and urban studies double major. I thought I wanted to save the world in some way. Did not really connect with any jobs that I had interviewed for.
There were no VPs of saving the world. It's always hard to do.
So I got involved with a nonprofit organization that was more of a political liaison between the real estate development industry and state and local government. I did that for a while. And then while I was doing that, I was also getting my real estate license. My dad was in real estate, and I thought, well, I can do that to make money on the side. So I was doing that.
How were you thinking about money at that time? Was it about saving and collecting?
It really was. It was about savings and trying to figure out, do I have enough that I could invest and then start building my own little nest egg for a car, for a house, or for my own dog, things like that. My parents were very good at explaining the costs associated with whatever it was that I wanted. So imparting in me the importance of knowing what I was wanting and knowing the pros and cons, if this, then that, or if this, then nothing else, what are your choices going to be? And it's important to weigh those choices and be realistic about why you want something, just because somebody else has it, or is it something that you actually need? A lot of my out of college years was saving. And even when I moved back home after college, I had to pay rent to my parents as a way of, you're going to be moving out eventually. You need to get in the habit of not having this amount of money. A little resentful on that, but I learned.
Jen, we're all roughly the same age, and your comments are reminding me what it was like in the early part of the 90s and what was happening in society, because at that time, media was telling all of us that we would never be as successful as our parents were. There was a focus on this frugality at least that I experienced in my life. So your story is really bringing that to life for me. And I thank you for that. It's so interesting how our money stories are impacted not only by the families that we grow up in, but also what's happening in the world around us. I'm curious, you're making your way, you're figuring out what holds your interest career-wise. How can you generate money to cover the lifestyle that you want to lead? You had some nonprofit experience. What comes about to cause you to create Pebble Tossers? And I love that name, by the way.
Thank you. So after I had three kids close together, I kind of shifted out of the nonprofit initially that I was working with. And then I started working with my dad in real estate development. And so we developed subdivisions or commercial industrial tracts. And I sold land. I didn't sell residential houses. I just did land. And it was very interesting. But as a 20-something-year-old female in a very male-dominated field, I was dismissed. I was overlooked. I mean, it was just kind of like, where's your dad? Okay, I'm here. You got to deal with me right now. That was kind of an interesting experience. Then I started having kids and I worked up until after my second child. And I was like, oh, this is just a lot. So I took a break, had another child. And then when my son was going into kindergarten, this was in 2008, I was like, okay, I'm ready to get back into the workforce. But whatever it is that I'm going to do, it's got to be worth it to take me away from my kids. And that was a big part of that. And even when I stopped working, it was a big conversation because as a real estate developer, I had a good salary. I was making commission and we were very comfortable with that. My husband also worked in real estate. It was a scary jump to just have one income. So then going back in 2008 saying, okay, again, this is a terrible time in the country, 2008.
A little crisis going on.
Yeah, the next best thing. Let's just start a nonprofit. And again, lots of conversations with my husband around that. And he's like, I feel your passion for this. And I knew that when starting Pebble Tossers, I wasn't going to be taking a salary for a while. And so we had to kind of navigate all of that. He calls himself my platinum sponsor, my full-time platinum sponsor because of supporting all of that. But being able to eventually get a salary, and again, still it's on the low end being a founder, I'd rather put the money back into building my team, making sure my team gets paid, making sure that we can have all of our operational costs met, things like that, all those little budget things that of running a business that you've got to make sure work. I co-founded Pebble Tossers with a friend and it was a leap of faith in a lot of ways. And our tagline is start a ripple of giving. And our mission is to equip and empower youth to lead through service. So it's giving kids at a young age opportunities and education around the different cause areas that are out there in the world and ways that they can get involved based on their likes and their interests and their skill set, even.
Tell us about this time period, because you mentioned leaving your career to be at home with your children was a big move. And then you wanted to go back to work and create something of your own, and it had to be worth it. How did you get your head wrapped around that? How did this idea come to you and your co-founder of what you wanted to do? What really caused you to move forward with taking that risk and that time and that use of your energy?
I knew that I wanted to kind of go into the corporate social responsibility space. I had seen other people sitting on boards and working for these big companies and be able to give away foundation money. And I was like, oh, that's what I want to do. Be great. And then this conversation happened with my co-founder when my oldest was 5 years old for her birthday. We're like, okay, instead of getting a $10 Target toy that is going to be in a corner in a month, let's just have your friends bring an item off of a wish list for a nonprofit as the birthday gift. And so we kind of started that at 5 years old with our kids. I honestly don't remember where we learned about that. My husband and I had both been on nonprofit boards. And so we were in that mindset, we let the kids pick, what do you want to do? And so she picked animals. And so we brought blankets and old towels and things like that. And then she got to take them to the shelter and got to see that. And we did not come home with the dog. But then each of the kids got to pick what they want, what organization or cause that they were committed to. My middle daughter chose the Boys and Girls Club. My husband was on the board there at the time. We got school supplies, things like that. So we let the kids pick based on what they cared about and what their interests were. In sharing that with my co-founder, her son had gone to a similar type of birthday party, and she was like, let's do that. And I was like, well, that's going to be a kind of a hard sell to just tell every random kid, hey, you can't have gifts for your birthday. You got to donate something. We really kind of decided to shift gears a little bit and focus on how kids could find things that they could actually do. And so many nonprofits, there's an age limit. You can't get involved if you're under 15 or 18 or whatever it is. So we kind of shifted. Let's find opportunities where families and kids can get involved and then can learn about these different cause areas. And so for a while, it was just like a matchmaker. Hey, these are these organizations. You can get a tour if you drop off something. And then it kind of moved into true youth development, where we began creating projects and creating opportunities. Over the last 15 years, we've really built in a curriculum of service learning, where it's social emotional learning, positive psychology, social justice. And it's not just taking a can that may be expired or maybe black beans that you don't like and giving them away. That's not truly what it's all about. It's learning about why someone needs those black beans or those fresh fruits and vegetables, trying to teach kids about the root cause of what these issue areas are, and then letting them learn and give back in ways that they can, physically, emotionally, developmentally, however.
Such important conversations you're having with these kids, and they're learning why money matters for these different philanthropic efforts, which is really cool. Jen, I want to take you back to when you were in your 20s. You talked about not just wanting to make money and save, that there was a point where you wanted to invest and grow it. And a money myth we hear a lot is, I'm not good at investing. We hear that a lot. I'm curious, you talked about growing up and you were exposed to stocks in the Wall Street Journal and or the some newspaper. Describe how you feel about investing.
It's important to diversify your portfolio and also to learn about things. If you're interested in something, go deep into it. My middle daughter is a nurse, and we were talking about like what matters to you or what is important in your life that you could invest in. She was looking at the caps that go on needles. These caps are everywhere and everybody needs these. I should invest in that company. And I was like, well, that was a very interesting, very specific thought. I don't think she did, but in my 20s, it was really about seeing what I wanted to do in the future. And my grandmother was a big traveler. And I was like, I want to travel. I want to be able to have the resources to go someplace for a week or whenever, someplace different. That's what I wanted to do. And so when I look at what I was saving my money for, it was for trips mainly and being able to do something fun and new and interesting. And I just thought that was exciting. It got me out of my little bubble. I also joined the botanical gardens and the High Museum of Art and things like that that were important to me. I guess I felt like, oh, I'm cultured. I can have a membership to these institutions and organizations. Not that I went all the time. I also knew that I was supporting those organizations. And even my high school, I donated money to my high school. I just felt that it was important that if I wanted to have enough money, I also learned from my parents that I also needed to give back. So that was very important into why I wanted to have money, to be able to share it and to use it in ways that were exciting to me.
Cammie, I'm really glad you asked Jen that question. Jen, as you were answering it, what was coming to life for me is throughout the arc of the story that you've shared with us is your continual investment, not only in stocks, but investing in yourself, investing in other people. And certainly that's what Pebble Tossers is doing. There's so many ways to invest and grow our portfolios, our own skills and competencies, and those of others. As you look back on the arc of Pebble Tossers and all the amazing things you guys have been able to evolve and do, that takes money and you need to generate that money. So tell us about some of those money conversations.
One of the things that was important to me was being able to have some self-sustaining revenue generating business model. How do we do this? Do we charge a membership? at the end of 2018, we did move into a membership model. And we tried to keep it pretty low. It's $35 for an individual for a year, $100 up to 8 people for a year. Part of that is to get skin in the game. If I'm going to pay $35, I want to get something out of it. And so they're going to come to a service project. They're going to join us. Subscription models are huge nowadays, but that was just key for us. I mean, right now it's generating probably about 30% of our overall revenue for our budget. We'd like to get that higher. We've brought on some new people. We've shifted platforms. That was a really big piece of being able to share our story with funders and donors. Not only we think we're important, but all these other people think that it's important enough to pay and join as well. It helps offset just operational expenses.
That's amazing. It is such a great approach. I love it.
When we first moved to that model, we only got 2 critical comments about why should I have to pay to volunteer? And I was like, well, you're not just paying to volunteer. We're doing all the organizing for you. We're providing all the supplies for you. We're telling you in a very clear, concise email, here's what you need to bring or not bring. Here's what you need to wear. You need to wear closed-toed shoes and bring a water bottle. And here's where to park. Here's which door to go into.
You're bringing value. That's right.
Yeah. And we're trying to make it simple for everybody, but also meaningful for the nonprofits, for the community that we're serving. Wrap it up in a nice little package, and then you pay to get your hair done. You pay maybe to get your lawn cut, all these subscriptions, Netflix.
For a lot of things you probably aren't using at all.
Yeah.
Oh, subscriptions.
It's a tax deductible membership, but that leverages the community. You are helping not just Pebble Tossers, not just yourself. You're helping all the nonprofit partners that we serve and their constituents, their clients. So it's truly like this triple ripple, and it just kind of expands.
You started out by telling us money equals success to your dad. What is money to you?
I still kind of have this conversation with my husband. Oh, I'm just not contributing as much as you are to talk our family. And he's like, will you stop already? You are paving your way for infinity. You're going to be fine. And I'm like, it's not about that. There's certain things that I equate still from my dad. We could do this or that. He's like, why? And so I really have had to shift my mindset about what is important. And to me, success is not the dollar signs. There's a sense of fulfillment that I have gotten from being able to help build my community through this organization. And that is worth a lot. You cannot put a number with that. I mean, technically you can, if you take volunteer hours and multiply it by the volunteer value, it's like $2 million that we've put back into the community. I've still kind of struggled with that personally, where like my salary is more of a stipend from like our own family perspective. But he's like, stop doing that to yourself, because that's just on you. My parents have donated to Pebble Tossers. They've been great supporters of Pebble Tossers. And they've said how proud they are of me about that. And so that also has kind of helped maybe shift the scales a little bit. When we were pregnant with our kids, we opened those 529 plans for each kid at birth, basically. And just every single month, put money into each of those accounts for all the kids. They don't have student debt now. That was like a huge gift. And my daughters have both graduated and have really understand this, because they're seeing their friends with student debt. And they're like, this is such a gift to us. We feel like that's given us an advantage in the workplace, because all of the money that we're earning now can be invested, can be saved. It doesn't have to go towards paying off college debt.
I love that. You set out the goal, you did the research, you figured out that there's these tax advantage savings plans called 529s for education funding. You took advantage of that. And now your kids are really starting to understand the benefit and leverage that. Great examples, Jen. We're curious, what is your next money conversation going to be, and who's it going to be with?
I started that conversation, and it's with my husband about retirement. I enjoy working. How do I travel? Do I want to stop working? And I'm like, I don't think I do. My dad, he'll be 87 next month, and he is still looking for deals. That is a role model. Having our conversation about what does retirement look like for us? He and I are looking at Do we want to stay here in Atlanta? Do we want to go someplace else? So those are fun conversations to have too.
Fun. Jen, this is exciting times and such important conversations.
He's like, you're going to be a crazy dog lady and open like a dog sanctuary for senior dogs or something.
Fantastic.
That's on the beach and have horses. I'm like, yes, let's do that.
Hey, Jen, super fun. I love it. Thank you for sharing so much of your story. Tell us, where is the best place for listeners to find you?
To find Pebble Tossers, it's pebbletossers.org. And our social media is at Pebble Tossers. LinkedIn, Instagram, social media, just all of those things. I am on LinkedIn. And yeah, that's probably the best place.
Fantastic, Jen. Well, thank you again. This has been a really special conversation.
It's been great. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thanks for listening to the Money Tales podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, share it with someone you think would benefit from listening. And leave us a review on your favorite podcasting platform. Your ratings and reviews help more people find our podcast. If you're inspired to gain clarity and peace of mind about financial matters, don't hesitate to reach out to our team at Asperient. Go to asperient.com/start-a-dialogue. Or you can email Sandy and me at podcasts@asperient.com. See you next time.